So last Sunday I was in Nashville and I celebrated Mass with the Dominican Sisters of St. Cecilia of Nashville. It's an older congregation. They're founded in the 19th century. They've been receiving a whole lot of new vocations, particularly for the last 10 years or so. And a lot of young Australian women have also gone across to be with them. And so one of them is a friend, and so I was visiting her. And there were about 160 sisters in this particular convent. And last weekend there was also a vocations weekend. So there was another 40 young women who were discerning joining this particular community. And so there was a young Dominican priest who was the celebrant last Sunday. And he began his homily by saying, you know, after the season of Lent and the season of Easter, we've now moved into this season of random feasts. Last week we had Trinity Sunday. This week Corpus Christi. Next, during the week, we celebrate the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And then here in the diocese, the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And of course also within the parish, we'll be celebrating Confirmation next weekend. But is that the case? Is this just a series of these random feast days? Is this the church just wanting to kind of extend the celebration or just trying to mess with us? What's going on? And particularly given the figures that the liturgy provides for our meditation today, we're given an even more random figure at the center, this figure of Melchizedek. Melchizedek punches well above his weight in terms of the reference that he gets in Scripture. The three verses that we read from the book of Genesis is the only place where anything about his life is told about. He just simply marches in, unannounced as it were, from the pages of history, to be there as this central character in the life of our father Abraham. Abraham has just returned from this great battle and he's won a victory. And he just, it seems, happens to encounter Melchizedek in the midst of all of this. Now the name Melchizedek is interesting. Melech means king in Hebrew. And so we're told that he is the king of what? Of Zadok, of righteousness, of justice. So this king of justice, this king of righteousness, who is also the king of Salem, the place that will become Jerusalem, the place of the city of peace. And so Melchizedek forms then this sign of what a true king is meant to be about. And what does he do? He offers this sacrifice, not of animals, this was the custom, but a sacrifice of bread and wine. And he's the prince or the king of Salem, king of Shalom, the king of peace. And so the early church began to see in this figure, and particularly in the letter to the Hebrews, following on from the psalm that we have today, Psalm 109, 110, where this figure of Melchizedek becomes a prophetic sign of what the true Messiah should be. A priest, king, one who will gather his people in the offering of sacrifice of bread and wine. And of course the church saw that Melchizedek became a sign of Jesus himself. Jesus who would offer his own body and blood in the form of bread and wine to bring life and healing to the church. And so he continues to be that sign for us of what our lives are meant to be about. One of the great things in the U.S. is there is a real revival of Eucharistic devotion. Many churches, as you travel around, are open 24 hours a day and have Eucharistic chapels where adoration is provided for anyone to go and to take part in that whenever they want. But it's not simply a sign of piety, because it's also challenging the church to be more involved in justice, to be more involved in their local communities, in feeding the hungry, in providing for the poor. These two things always seem to go hand in hand wherever the Eucharist is celebrated and worshipped properly. The sense that, yes, it's truly in the Eucharist that we find our hunger satisfied, all of our thirsts and desires fulfilled. But that is never enough. Anyone who has worshipped before the very presence of Jesus in the Eucharist is changed and transformed, and to recognize that there are others around us who continue to hunger. The first hunger that every single person on the planet has, of course, is the hunger for the Lord. The hunger to actually experience and encounter the Lord in relationship. And so our first call today, perhaps, is to think of those people in our lives that we know were once Catholics, were once part of this community, but who've drifted away from the practice of the faith for whatever reason. Who can we invite? Who can we say, look, come with me. Join with me at Mass next Sunday. Come and be part of this community once again. Come and be fed by the very presence of the Lord in the body and blood offered to us in the Mass. Come and allow the great grace and gift of the Lord to feed you and nourish you once again. Maybe there are people who are hungering in different ways, hungering to simply share in that life of God, to share in fellowship with you, to share in that life and love that we alone are able to offer, just to be there as a friend, to be a listening ear, to be someone who can provide that comfort and consolation that so many people need. Perhaps it is the actual bread that people need. They need to have that sustenance in their lives and they just don't have enough to eat. Perhaps the challenge that we have is to be indeed be people of justice in that way, to offer money to care for the poor, to feed the world, to feed so many people who indeed hunger. This feast of the body and blood of Christ provides the daily life of the church. It provides that sign of, are we truly living out our call as a Christian people to be followers of Jesus? In the gospel today, we heard that the disciples, those people who were closest to the heart of Jesus, and yet they still at this point in his ministry don't get it. When they see the crowd, they say to Jesus, send them away. Get rid of these people. There's too many of them for us to handle. And the answer that Jesus gave his disciples is the same answer that he continues to give to us. Give them something to eat yourselves. Allow them to find that life in him. And the sign that he then gives as he takes the bread, as he blesses the bread, as he breaks the bread. All of those actions that the early church would have recognized in the very Eucharist as they gathered each Sunday in worship. This is our call as well. Well, who are those people in our lives that are hungering for the Lord, hungering for food, hungering for anything that we can provide? What is our response? Do we say, send them away, to someone else's responsibility? Or do we allow the Lord to call us when he says, give them something to eat yourselves?